Radio Prague News.
The culture minister says the government is close to buying a former World War II concentration camp for Romanies. The trial has begun of four people accused of planning a terrorist attack on a train. And the Czech group at the Olympic Games will feature a chaplain for the first time in Rio de Janeiro. The cabinet is close to reaching agreement on the state buying the site of a World War II concentration camp for Romanies, which now contains a pig farm, says the Minister of Culture, Daniel Herman. Hundreds of people died at the then concentration camp at Leti in South Bohemia. Speaking at a memorial ceremony there on Tuesday, Mr. Herman said he believed the government would succeed in resolving the whole matter before the end of their term of office in October next year. He said the current cabinet was nearer to turning the complex into a memorial than any of its predecessors had ever been. The trial has begun of four men accused of planning a terrorist attack on a train in the Czech Republic. One of the defendants, anarchist Martin Ignacek, told the Prague Municipal Court that the idea of carrying out acts of violence had come from undercover police officers who had infiltrated their group. He said the police agents had bought materials to produce petrol bombs and selected the location for an attack. According to the indictment in the case, Mr. Ignacek, Petrusova and police agents buried materials for making petrol bombs near a railway bridge in April 2015. The pair were among a group of people arrested a week later. President Milos Zeman says Parliament should debate the issue of whether or not to accept refugees allotted to the Czech Republic under an EU scheme. Communicating through his spokesperson, Mr. Zeman said on Tuesday that the country could not afford to risk terrorist attacks like those that had occurred in France and Germany. Accepting migrants would be to create a breeding ground for barbaric attacks in the Czech Republic, he said. The Prague government is committed to accepting nearly 2,700 asylum seekers under the EU plan. The head of coalition party ANO, Andrei Babiš, also says the country should refuse to accept any refugees. The Czech group at the Olympic Games will feature a chaplain for the first time in Rio de Janeiro, the Czech news agency reported. Oldřich Kocholáč, who is 31 and works in the Brno diocese, said on the website of the Roman Catholic Czech Bishops' Conference that he saw his mission in Brazil as serving not only Christian athletes, but all members of the team who wish to discuss their participation in the Olympics or any other subject. Mr. Kocholáč was appointed chaplain by the chairman of the Czech Bishops' Conference, Cardinal Dominik Duka. The National Stud Farm in Kladruby nad Labem, central Bohemia, is planning to apply for inclusion on the UNESCO World Heritage List in September next year. The deputy governor of the Pardubice region, Roman Línek, told the Czech news agency. Following the application, there will be a 2 or 3 year process before the stud farm learns whether it has been accorded the prestigious status. Founded in 1579, the Kladruby stud is known for its large Kladruber horses, one of the oldest breeds in the world. This year's edition of the Prague Pride LGBT Festival will culminate with the parade on Saturday, the 13th of August, the organisers announced on Tuesday. The parade will observe a minute's silence for the victims of a recent massacre at an LGBT club in the US city of Orlando, festival director Katarzyna Saparova told reporters. As in previous years, a conservative group is planning a counter-gathering in the Czech capital on the same day as the Prague Pride Parade. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Danielle Lazarová. Coming up in today's programme, the Finance Ministry posts a record budget surplus mid-year, and tests for taxi drivers in Prague may soon get harder. Later on in Focus, we look at a guidebook to the wild side of Prague. All that coming up, so do stay with us. The Czech finance ministry posted a state budget surplus of 75.6 billion crowns at the end of July, up from 41 billion the previous month. The surplus is 50 billion crowns higher than that registered in the same period last year and is the best result since the founding of the Czech Republic in 1993. The finance ministry says this reflects sound fiscal management and the effectiveness of measures introduced to fight tax evasion. I asked economist David Marek from Deloitte & Touche for his take on what's behind the record surplus.
The main reason behind very good budgetary data is especially the situation in the Czech economy. So the GDP growth keeps between 2-3%, and unemployment rate is the lowest in the last 10-15 years. Thus, tax collection is much higher than in previous years, helping to keep budget in a surplus and even increasing this surplus compared to previous years.
Is it the economy or is it more effective tax collecting, as the finance minister claims?
I would say it's both, but the situation in the economy is much more important factor behind improving budgetary data. On the other hand, some increase in tax collection can be visible as well. But I would attribute better budgetary data, especially to economic growth.
Can this last? Is it sustainable?
I would expect a mild deterioration in the second half of this year because it's a typical seasonal pattern of the state budget. Usually the government pays big tickets in last 2-3 months of the year. So especially before Christmas, I would expect that the budget can slip back to a mild deficit.
The opposition has criticized the government for excessive spending at a time when the economy is doing so well and when the surplus is so big. Would you agree with that?
So far, I would say that budget for development is okay, and the critics of too much spending is not much relevant. But if the budget deficit should deteriorate in the coming months, then it would be right to criticize the government because now the situation in the economy is very positive, and the government should try to keep the budget in mild surplus and spare some money for worse times.
Economic analyst David Marek there. Moving on now, tests for future taxi drivers in parts of the Czech Republic, including the capital Prague, could soon get harder, requiring more than geographical knowledge or how to operate a taximeter. Under an amendment being prepared by the Transport Ministry, individual municipalities could opt for stricter rules, for example, requiring taxi drivers to complete psychological and foreign language tests. Jan Wellinger has the details.
New traffic legislation being proposed by the Transport Ministry appears likely to make it a bit harder for future cabbies to secure a license, depending on whether they are adopted by different municipalities. While the eastern city of Ostrava is not planning on changes based on the proposal, Czech TV reported on Monday that Prague is aiming to take advantage, requiring taxi drivers to successfully complete a foreign language test as well as psychological evaluation. The Czech capital currently has more than 6,500 cabbies. In the future, it could become more difficult for new drivers to join their ranks. Even so, Vít Hoffmann, spokesman for Prague City Hall, confirmed that Prague is very much on board.
Zavedení psychotestů je pro nás velmi vítané.
We very much welcome the inclusion of new psychological testing, and we're also considering some kind of a language test.
Také zvažujeme nějakou zkoušku z jazyka.
Further changes proposed could also limit the maximum age of vehicles in service or make it easier to remand taxi drivers' licenses, this in the case of traffic transgressions, as well as tighten restrictions for service providers. Tomáš Nerold, the spokesman for the country's transport ministry, explains.
Chceme, aby alespoň měli základní odpovědnost.
We want them to bear responsibility for the driver truly having a valid license.
Že dopravce má licenci a řidič má oprávnění řidiče taxislužby.
That, however, has been met with skepticism by at least some in the taxi business. Daniel Tarjovský of the Czech Association of Taxi Concession Holders had the following response on Czech television.
Nedokážu si představit, že by každý zprostředkovatel taxislužby denně...
I can't imagine how any taxi service operator could bombard City Hall daily with thousands of requests to determine whether on any given day drivers had their licenses in order.
Žádosti na magistrát o ověření těch řidičů, jestli ten den mají opravdu ty licence v pořádku.
Along with Prague, the country's second largest city, Brno, also has signaled it will adopt the proposed changes. Reportedly, though, expanding them even for so-called You Drink and We Drive services, in which a professional driver takes the owner and their vehicle home after they've consumed alcohol. Liberec, north of Prague, by contrast, wants to make it easier for taxi drivers to obtain licenses and easier to retake tests if need be, Czech TV reported.
Jan Wellinger with that report. A reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where we move on to our main feature, In Focus with Ruth Franková.
With the tourist season in full swing, Prague is swarming with visitors admiring its historical sites and monuments. But the city has more to offer than just its culture and history. The Academia Publishing House recently released a rather unusual guidebook of the capital. Entitled Divoká příroda Prahy, or The Wild Nature of Prague, it offers a completely different perspective on the city, as seen through the eyes of two passionate naturalists. When I met with one of the guidebook's authors, Radek Mikuláš, I first asked him to define the term wild nature.
It's a nature that develops spontaneously, without human intentions. It can happen on mountains, it can happen on rocks, but it can also happen in the city. And it happens much more often than usual people presume.
You are a geologist by profession. What led you to write this unusual guide?
During my geological research on walks in Prague, just for refreshing, I found a lot of plants and a lot of fascinating pieces of nature, and I wanted to understand that. I asked my colleagues botanists for such a book, and they told me that nothing like it exists. There are essays, and there are some scientific papers on it, but there is nothing for usual people who live in such nature. So I began to pursue Jiří Sádlo, who is a renowned botanist, to write that book. But Jiří Sádlo didn't agree, and he contacted me with Jan Albert Šturma as a possible co-author. But Albert was not willing to write the whole book, so finally, I agreed to learn something more about the plants in the city and to join as a co-author of texts and also author of all the photos which are in the book, because Albert, the co-author, didn't make so much photos, but he has perfect drawings.
And the drawings are also included in the book, a few of them.
Yes.
What is the aim of your guide? What's the main purpose of the book?
Well, to show the people who noticed this nature in the city, to give them an explanation. What do they see and what's the perspective of that, and whether there are some rare species or whether it's all common, whether they came from different continents or how did they spread on train lines. It's a common way of spreading of neophytes, of new vegetation, and so on. So either to explain or just to show the nature to people who don't pay attention to that.
At the beginning of your book, there is a small map with the most interesting points worth seeing, and then they are described in greater details in individual chapters. How did you classify the different types of landscapes or wild landscapes in Prague?
Well, first there is a map where some 50 places are put and they are briefly described. And then some 20 of these places are described in a form of, say, personal talk or personal experience of either me or Albert or both of us if we were all together on the place. And the classification is given to some extent by the order of the chapters. Each chapter describes some specific settings, let us say Prague underground. It means canals or artificial caves or old mines and so on, which exist in Prague and still are inhabited by bats, let us say. So this is one of the level of classification. At the end of the book, there is also about 50 specific vegetation types. For example, there are savanna growth with bush grass, Calamagrostis epigaeus, and staghorn sumac, Rus typhina. So these two plants make the base of the community. And there are also examples of, say, minor size. On pavement margins, there is a common purslan, also known as pigweed, which is eatable. I didn't try, but my co-author did and survived.
That's great to know. So in times of hunger, we know that there are edible...
It's a big benefit of the book, I guess. After the future collapse, it will be useful.
Actually, the very first chapter is written by you, if I'm not mistaken. It's called Wandering Through Prague's Primeval Forests. Are there really any remains of primeval forests in the Czech capital?
Well, there is no really primeval forest in Prague, but there is something which can easily be called a primary forest. Primeval forests usually are understood to continue from medieval and even older times of the human history. They should be untouched by human activity, human management. But in Prague, some forests develop spontaneously on the ruins of the city, on a place where the human intentions were lost. Ruins or abandoned parks or abandoned gardens. There are many possibilities. And once again, these places were covered by vegetation from zero, factually. And then this vegetation developed to a forest growth. So this is the primeval forest of Prague.
Talking about forests, one of the Prague forests that you mention is called Milichovský High, but that has a slightly different history because, if I'm not mistaken, that was sort of artificially made when they were building one of Prague's biggest housing estates, Jižní Město, and they brought those mounds that were dug out, and on those artificial mounds they planted the forest.
You explained it more or less well. In the beginning of 1990s, it was concluded to make a so-called forestry restorations in this official language. But in practice, it meant that each bush or tree, which was superfluous in garden center, was probably taken and planted out on the dump in thousands of seedlings. And there are rare and nice and expensive varieties aside the most common ones, together with species which come from the surrounding settings. And nearly everything survives and is flourishing. It's a miracle, because if you make such a great collection of species on your garden, it would be probably pretty difficult to keep it. But there is no care in the Milichov dump, but still everything is vital and flourishing.
What's your explanation?
It's a good question and difficult one. Probably the combinations are so much unusual in comparison with normal nature that there is not so much competition.
You also authored another chapter called Prague, a Salt Lake City. What part of the city reminded you of that place?
10 years ago, I saw this great salt lake in Utah. And after that, some years, I found the water reservoir in Praha Hostivář, which is several kilometers long. And then it was emptied and desiccated. And on the bottom, there were deep cracks in the mud and thin salt crusts. So it is the similarity with the Great Salt Lake. And there was a strange mixture of plants with salt-preferring species. We found carcasses of large fish, Asian grass carp, about 1 meter long. And we found also shells of a tropical red-eared turtle, which doesn't appear normally in the nature of the Czech Republic, but probably terrarists or aquarists are unhappy because these animals eat a lot and they grow a lot, so they probably gave them freedom in the reservoir.
And then they actually survive in...
Survived many years probably, and the last information I got is that they even were able to breed. So it might be a great danger for fish because they eat fish eggs and they eat small, just breeded fish. So we will see.
You also mention places which are right in the center of Prague, such as Uhelný trh or Karlovo náměstí. What kind of imprints of wild nature can be found there?
It's chiefly a topic of my co-author, but Albert considers the paving of the Uhelný trh square, which is in the historic city center, to be continuously vegetated with disturbances, of course, but with the continuity for hundreds of years. Plants resistant to trampling, like thyme leaf, sandwort, can survive. There is a market, so there has always been a source of nutrients for plants and a lot of people as well.
At the end of your book, there are several supplements, and one of them is this chapter called Prague Nature as Seen from Trams. In this respect, what is actually your favorite tram line?
Probably number 17. It's a tram line that goes from the southern part of Prague in Modřany, then it crosses the city center and ends at Ládví, which is the northern margin of Prague. And these parts, like former fields in Modřany or old limestone quarries at Bráník, are places I know from my childhood. Then the tram crosses the center riverbank of the Vltava, and finally, at the north part of the city, the tram crosses steep slopes with remnants of maybe 80 years old colonial houses in Troja and Kobylisi. So it's not only botanic remnant of something old, but it's a social remnant.
What I like about your guide is that besides giving sort of detailed description of the different locations that you describe, it's also very poetic, and the individual chapters are divided by koans, by short stories or statements which are used in Zen practice. Who is the author of these koans? Who had this idea?
The koans were written by Albert Sturma before we started to work on the guidebook. It was one of the texts he gave me just to incorporate somehow to the material we have. The koan, as one text, it's not a description of botany, it's a description of emotions which a perceptive person can have face to face with bushes or plants of the city. So finally, I divided the text into a dozen shorter texts that divide the main chapters now.
Finally, as you point out at the beginning of your book, wilderness is in nature something that's sort of changing. And I wonder whether all the places that you have described in the book are actually still there, because as you said, it's something that keeps changing and dying out and then appearing somewhere else.
Well, some places we described have already disappeared. An old factory in Štěrbohoře was broken and replaced by living houses now. Or the water reservoir with turtles was filled again with water. But on the other hand, as quickly the wild nature of the city disappears, it reappears on different place again.
And that edition of In Focus brings us to the end of today's program from Prague. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then please write to english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care.